This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Marianne Zalesnik. Later in the program, we'll hear about a new initiative from the Port to help lower-income families with housing. It announced it's in process of purchasing 194 single-family homes with the goal of making tenants homeowners. But first, we're going to hear about convalescent plasma. A 16-month study from Johns Hopkins University shows it reduced hospitalizations for COVID-19 by 54%. Joining me to talk about it and how it's being used locally are Associate Professor of Medicine at Johns Hopkins University and Principal Investigator on the study, Dr. Shmuel Shoham. Welcome, Dr. Shoham.
Thank you.
And University of Cincinnati Hawksworth Blood Center, and Hawksworth Blood Center, University of Cincinnati Chief Medical Officer, Dr. David O. Certainly happy to have you here as well, Dr. O.
Thank you for inviting me.
To get started, I want to remind people, if you have a question, you can call us 513-419-7100 or email talk at WVXU.org. We're also on Facebook and Twitter. As we get started, and I want to start with you, Dr. Shoham, can you explain what convalescent plasma is?
Sure. So just a quick correction. We actually did two studies. One was for post-exposure prophylaxis. In that one, I was the principal investigator. And then the other one, which I really will focus on today, which was for treatment. And that one, David Sullivan, my colleague, was the principal investigator. I was a co-investigator. So with that out of the way, what is convalescent plasma? That is, so plasma is the part of blood that has antibodies in it. It has other things in it as well, but it has antibodies in it. It looks clear to yellow in color. And when somebody has recovered from an infection, they are called convalescent, and you can obtain the plasma from them that has antibodies against the thing that they were infected with. In this particular case, it's SARS-CoV-2.
And how does this convalescent plasma work? Tell us about your study. What did you do with it to help people who had COVID?
Sure. So for over 100 years, people have been using antibodies as a means of protecting or treating infections. And in that way, COVID is no different in that people are using antibodies, whether it's monoclonal antibodies or polyclonal antibodies. That's what plasma is. It has many different antibodies, not just one antibody like the monoclonal antibodies. And the goal is to hit the infection early and therefore neutralize the virus before the body's immune system goes berserko and causes some of the complications that we've seen. Because thinking about COVID, it actually has two main phases. One phase, which thankfully most people will never graduate out of, is the infection phase, where they just have to deal with the virus. And then the person either gets better or they go on to the second phase, in which case their immune system goes nuts, starts to attack the lung and other parts of the body, and then they end up in the hospital and the intensive care unit and worse. So antivirals, which include antibodies, will work against the early phase, which is when the virus is doing the damage.
So talk to us about the study that you did. When did you try to get the convalescent plasma to people that were suffering from COVID?
So using the principles I just mentioned, the goal was to get the plasma, which has the antibodies, to people in the early phase of infection, not while they're sick enough to be in the hospital or requiring oxygen, but early on. So we put an artificial number saying no more than 8 days after they had the first symptom of infection. There's nothing magical about 8 days. It could have been seven. It could have been nine. But the goal was to get people early and also people that are not yet sick enough to be in the hospital. And the so that was the intervention, giving plasma or a placebo to people that were early on in the infection. And the outcome was to see if we can prevent them from graduating to the point of requiring hospitalization.
So keeping them out of the hospital is what your goal was with this. So
exactly.
They were still possibly sick, but not as sick as they could have been otherwise.
Exactly.
And you said you give this to them when they aren't in the hospital, but I thought this was only done not as outpatient therapy, only as inpatient therapy. Is that not the case?
So the FDA authorization was up until about a month ago for out for inpatients only people that are sick enough to be in the hospital. However, this study was, the goal of the study was to give information to the FDA and to the world to see if it could be extended to the outpatient. So the study was an outpatient study, and we gave it in clinics that were connected to hospitals and clinics that were in standalone clinics that had that were not near hospitals. Again, the goal was to prove that it could be used in the outpatient setting to reach the to prevent hospitalization.
I do want to talk more about all of this study, but I want to ask a question of Dr. O. Is Hawksworth gathering convalescent plasma right now?
So at the moment, we are not, but we were very early in collecting convalescent plasma. I think we'll go into some of the reasons that we're not collecting now in a second, but we actually were able to supply the first convalescent plasma in April of 2020, really before it hit Cincinnati in large numbers. We had a peak at one point of distributing over 60 units of convalescent plasma every day, and that was kind of in the second wave. More recently, as we've looked at collecting and distributing convalescent plasma, there have been a number of changes from FDA, and then the success of monoclonal therapies before Omicron hit really led people to start using those therapies in preference of convalescent plasma. We're really thankful that this study is out now, so we can have more evidence that convalescent plasma was helpful for individuals who received it early in the course. I think that discussion is whether we should start collecting convalescent plasma again, or whether it's too late to restart all of our efforts across the country.
I would like to talk, Dr. Schmuel, about the difference between monoclonal antibodies and the convalescent plasma. Now, you had talked about, and Dr. O also just mentioned, that the monoclonal antibody treatment was very successful before Omicron. Tell us the difference between the two. Do they work differently in the body? Do they attack the disease, the virus, differently?
So there are similarities. They're both under the general category of passive immunotherapy. So active immunotherapies, you give a vaccine, the body makes its own antibodies. Passive immunotherapies, you give an antibody that's already been preformed. And the preforming of the antibody can be in another person, and that's where convalescent plasma is. And it's more of a gamish of different antibodies because the person is responding to the whole virus. Or it could be a laboratory created antibody that's very specific, sort of like a smart missile, if you will, that is the monoclonal antibodies, and that it could, and monoclonal meaning one antibody, and typically they're given as actually cocktails, like the Regeneron cocktail is two different antibodies. The advantage of the monoclonal antibodies is that each lot is exactly the same because it's done in the laboratory and under industrial pharmaceutical conditions. So you know exactly what you're getting. The monoclonal antibody product that you got today is the same you're going to get tomorrow, is the same as the next day. Whereas convalescent plasma is more variable because it depends on individual people and how they responded to the virus. The disadvantage of monoclonal antibodies is because they are either one or two antibodies, then if there is a variant that happens in the virus that makes it so that the virus has changed a little bit, then the monoclonal may not hit the targets. And that's what we've seen with, the Regeneron product and the Lilly products, and that they were very effective against some variants, but then this Omicron variant, they're just not effective at all. Sotrovimab, which is a product that's out now, is effective against the Omicron. However, the supply of it is limited, and we don't know what the next Greek letters will bring, but it's quite possible that those will again be sensitive to some of the older ones that I mentioned that we can't use, or resistant to everything, in which case we're not quite back to square one, because we will always have convalescent plasma, which it refreshes itself with each new wave then people that recover from that wave will have antibodies effective against that virus.
Now, you were conducting this study for 16 months, so that was before the Omicron variant was prevalent. Talk a little bit about why the convalescent plasma will work against the Omicron variant, even if the antibodies weren't from a person who had the Omicron variant, if that makes sense.
Yep, no, that makes exact sense. So I would not advocate for people using old convalescent plasma that's gotten, say, 6 months ago, 12 months ago, a year ago against Omicron, because it might not be a direct fit. However, even people that have not been infected with Omicron, if they've been vaccinated, there's data showing that if somebody's been vaccinated twice or three times with an mRNA vaccine, and then also sometime in the past couple of years they've had an infection, then they have lots of antibodies, and they may not be exactly a direct hit against Omicron, but they have so many of them that they can do a good job in terms of neutralizing the virus. Probably not as good as if it was an Omicron infection plus a vaccine, but good enough to get you in the ballpark.
Dr. O, when you explain, when you were collecting convalescent plasma, do you keep it very long? Does it have a shelf life?
That's a great question. So a convalescent plasma has a shelf life, about 12 months. Many blood centers really stopped collecting fresh CCP around March of last year, I would say. We are affected by different governmental policies as organizations. And for us to continue collecting after March of last year was a much increased financial burden, because some of the funding that was available for blood centers to collect convalescent plasma was eliminated. This was before the study was performed, and we had data which would give strong suggestion that convalescent plasma really was helpful for a certain subset of patients. So at that point, I think a lot of blood centers kind of moved away from convalescent plasma. And then now we are facing this national blood shortage. So we are struggling right now as an industry or as a sector to collect enough blood products, red cells and platelets and non-convalescent plasma, but fresh frozen plasma, to supply our hospitals for patients in need right now. So the diversion of an additional large amount of resources for us to continue with convalescent plasma collection programs is going to be very difficult, I think, for most blood centers in this situation.
This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Marianne Zalesnik. We continue our discussion now about convalescent plasma in the treatment of COVID-19. My guests are Associate Professor of Medicine at Johns Hopkins University, Dr. Shmuel Shoham, and Hawksworth Blood Center Chief Medical Officer, Dr. David O. Before we took a break, we were talking about collecting the convalescent plasma and having enough of it, and the concerns with just blood shortages in general. And Dr. Shoham, can you talk about that? Did you have any trouble getting enough convalescent plasma for your study?
So for the study, we did not have a problem getting it because it was under study conditions, and we found places that could supply it to us. But in clinical practice, it's becoming increasingly hard to get it, which is heartbreaking, because we have a situation, particularly for people that really could benefit from this type of therapy, immunocompromised people that have gotten the vaccine and cannot make antibodies against the vaccine, or have not gotten the vaccine for some reason and are really exposed. And those people, if they become infected with COVID, we try to get them sotrovimab, which is the monoclonal that is effective against Omicron. But there are severe shortages in that product, so we don't always manage it, particularly in a timely manner. And some of the new antivirals that are out there that are pills can be problematic, particularly in transplant patients, because of drug-drug interactions with their immune suppressive medications. So we're in a situation where we have a product, convalescent plasma, that we know can keep significant number of people out of the hospital, and we want to order it, but we can't have it because the supply is not there, because the blood banks are trying to get people red cells and platelets and the basics of blood banking, and the logistics are just too difficult at this point. It is heartbreaking.
I do want to mention, and the results of your study and what you found, this was very, very effective. However, the WHO, the World Health Organization, has come out against this and is not supporting this kind of treatment. What's your reaction to that?
I think it's unfortunate that the WHO has come out against it. We've reached out to them to try to review the data with them. I think that they are just wrong in that they're an organization that I have respect for, but in this particular situation, I think they made the wrong decision. And part of the reason why I think they made the wrong decision is because they say that in particular, they don't recommend it for outpatient and have a strong recommendation against it. And I don't know how one could take over 1,000 patient randomized controlled trial done at some of the most careful and cautious institutions in the U.S. and just say, nah, we're not going to look at that. That's not useful for us.
Dr. O, when you are collecting this type of convalescent plasma, if you are able to, are you looking for particular people, people that have had COVID recently, people who have been vaccinated? Does a vaccination, I know we talked about that a little bit, but does having a vaccination make you more or less of a good donor for this type of convalescent plasma?
Well, I think this is a large part of the concern for blood centers and really difficulty for us to be able to collect these products. When we started in April of 2020, FDA published really, really helpful guidance for the industry. And we never could have actually done this in the scale that we did without FDA's guidance and really defining, you know, what convalescent plasma was. But we've discussed this as the pandemic has evolved, that we're really building the CCP or convalescent plasma airplane while we were flying it, or we were flying it while we were building it, to be able to get the products. And over time, there have been cyclical increased standards that are required for convalescent plasma to continue to label it after we've been collecting it. And really, there was a final group in December of 2020 that really made it very difficult for us. And it had to do with who we could qualify as an eligible donor, whether they could donate after they've been vaccinated, time restrictions on the time after having a clinical infection, and all these difficulties for us in terms of trying to document all of these different pieces of information for us to be able to create convalescent plasma, which is actually considered to be a drug as well as a biologic. And so we have to be very careful when we're manufacturing these products for distribution so that they are labeled appropriately and that they conform to all the requirements that the government requires.
Do you have any concerns about the WHO not supporting it?
You know, I think WHO kind of came out with their stance before this study was known to them. And then I think it's difficult for them to reevaluate at this time. I try to stay out of the politics of all the stuff. But I do think this was a great study I think it did show that convalescent plasma is helpful for people if given early in a disease course.
Dr. Schmuel, do you have any concerns that if people know there are all these treatments available, they just say, well, hey, if I get COVID, I'll just go get the treatment. I'm not going to worry about getting vaccinated.
I think that's an approach that is risky because treatments are effective, and thankfully there's a lot of them, but as has been said for generations, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. So I think it's always, in my mind, the best approach to not have a problem to in the first place. That having been said, some people are unable to prevent the infection because they don't respond to the vaccine, or they've had a severe reaction to one of the doses of the vaccine and they can't get additional vaccines. So it's great to have access to that.
Would that be like a person with a compromised immune system?
Exactly.
So, and you believe that this would help them? I just have a few seconds left here, but that would help somebody, for example, that's on getting treated for cancer or something like that.
I think if they're getting treatment for cancer in a way that meaningfully reduces their immune system, that would be an option for them. And just one statement about the WHO.
10 seconds.
It is common for physicians and scientists to have disagreements, and it doesn't mean that we don't like each other or we don't respect each other. It's part of the process.
Thank you both so much for being here. I really appreciate it. Learned a lot today.
Great. Thank you.
This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Producer is Selena Reeder. Assistant producer is Nick Swartzel. Engineer for today's show is Josh Elstro. I'm Marianne Zalesnik.